Now, the Senate Judiciary Committee says it's still on track to start confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett on October 12th. Coney Barrett has been on President Trump's list of potential nominees for a couple years now, and he hopes to have her confirmed by the November 3rd election. Cases of COVID-19 in Washington are putting that in some doubt. A potential 6-3 conservative majority on the court could quickly leave its mark on issues like health care, immigration, abortion, and more. Amy Howe is the co-founder of SCOTUS Blog. She still reports on the Supreme Court for the blog and writes at amylhowe.com. Amy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Well, all reporting this year seems to turn into COVID-19 reporting. First of all, Amy, is this shaking up the confirmation process? At least one U.S. senator now testing positive.
It's not entirely clear yet. You know, Lindsey Graham tweeted, he's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee right now, tweeted shortly before noon that he looked forward to welcoming Senator Lee, who has tested positive for COVID-19 as a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, back to the committee to start hearings for Amy Coney Barrett on October the 12th. I know that Senator Dianne Feinstein, who's one of the senior Democrats on the committee, and Senator Chuck Schumer had expressed concern about going forward with the hearings. You know, certainly Senator Feinstein's 87, Senator Chuck Grassley, who's on the committee, is 87, Senator Patrick Leahy, who's another senior Democrat on the committee, is 80. But Senator Graham wants to move forward with the 3 days of hearings starting on October 12th. It's not really clear, whether or not Democrats, there's anything they can do to stop it. You know, I think there is some precedent for having, confirmation hearings, if not of Supreme Court justices, certainly, but of lower court judges virtually. So that, you know, perhaps that's an option.
Well, you've written a profile of Judge Amy Coney Barrett, actually before we knew she was the nominee. What stands out to you about her as a nominee and potential Supreme Court justice?
Well, you know, one thing it's a little bit ironic is that, you know, she was high on the president's list in no small part because of her 2017 confirmation hearings. So she was a law professor for about 15 years. And then was nominated by the president in 2017 to take a seat on the federal appeals court that sits in Chicago. And Senator Feinstein and some of the other Democratic senators questioned the extent to which her Catholic beliefs, her Catholic faith might influence her judging. And Senator Feinstein, in this moment that's gone viral, said, you know, the dogma lives loudly within you. And that really made her actually, I think, a hero among religious conservatives. You know, the coffee mugs and T-shirts were made. She was confirmed at the end of October 2017. And a couple of weeks later, when the president released a new list of potential Supreme Court nominees, there was Judge Amy Coney Barrett on the list.
There are two things I think people look at. Partly it's the resume and qualifications. Partly it's ideology, legal philosophy, that kind of thing. On the resume side of things, how does Judge Coney Barrett stack up?
You know, she has not been on the Court of Appeals quite as long as the president's two prior nominees, Justice Neil Gorsuch and Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Justice Gorsuch was on the Court of Appeals for 11 years, and Justice Gorsuch was on the Court of Appeals for 12 years. But 3 years is, I think, you know, certainly, I don't think anyone is going to question that that's long enough on the Court of Appeals. You know, Justice Elena Kagan did not sit on the Court of Appeals at all. And I think that there's not a lot of dispute about whether or not, you know, she sort of has the intellectual firepower to do the job. I think the dispute is really going to be much more about ideology.
Talking to Amy Howe, co-founder of SCOTUS Blog and a regular reporter on the Supreme Court, about nominee Amy Coney Barrett and the confirmation hearings ahead. We'll get into some of those issues of important cases on the way. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the confirmation process for this Supreme Court seat should move forward or wait until after the election or after the inauguration? What do you think of this particular nominee, Amy Coney Barrett? Is there an issue you are hopeful for or worried about should she end up on the court? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Amy Howe, Supreme Court reporter and co-founder of SCOTUS Blog, looking at nominee Judge Amy Coney Barrett and the impact she could have on the court. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on whether the confirmation process should go forward now before the election, now in the midst of concerns about COVID-19 among U.S. senators and White House staff, including the president, and questions and concerns about what another justice, a conservative-leaning justice, could mean for big issues? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Amy, let's talk about the ideological side of things. What do we know based on Judge Coney Barrett's record about what she might look like as a Supreme Court justice?
Probably the most telling thing was what she said at her remarks in the Rose Garden on Saturday. She talked about the late Justice Antonin Scalia, for whom she served as a law clerk, and she said, "His judicial philosophy is mine." Justice Scalia was what's known as an originalist, which means that he believed when you're interpreting the Constitution, you look at the words as the people who drafted them and what the people who drafted them intended them to mean. You don't interpret the words in the way, you know, with a view to how the country might have changed over the last 200 some odd years. And then when you're interpreting a law, you look at the words on the page. It's what's known as textualism. And so if that's the case, and we have no reason to believe it wouldn't be, she said, "His judicial philosophy is mine," it seems like she would be one of the more conservative members of the Supreme Court, probably more like Justice Neil Gorsuch than Justice Brett Kavanaugh, to sort of put her in comparison with the president's two prior appointees.
We have a big court case coming up on the Affordable Care Act, a legal challenge to it from states backed by the Trump administration along the way. Do you see this particular justice, if she ends up being a justice, swaying that outcome one way or another?
You know, that is a great question. You know, it's a complicated case. We do know that this was a case back in 2012. It's a challenge to that. Back in 2012, the Supreme Court reviewed a challenge to the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate. It's the requirement that almost all Americans either buy health insurance or pay a penalty. And as many of your listeners probably remember, the Chief Justice, John Roberts, joined the court's former liberal justices in holding that this mandate was constitutional because it was a tax. Congress has the power to tax people. And so back in 2017, Congress essentially eliminated the tax for failing to get health insurance and said, you still have to buy health insurance, but if you don't buy health insurance, the penalty is zero. So Texas and a group of states went to court and said, well, if the mandate was constitutional because it's a tax, and now there's no tax, it can't be constitutional anymore. So that issue is back at the Supreme Court. You know, now there are eight justices right now on the Supreme Court. Justice Ginsburg, who was one of the justices in the majority who said that the mandate was constitutional, has passed away. And so it was a question. There are a couple of things going on. You know, Justice Kavanaugh was not on the Supreme Court at the time. He replaced Justice Kennedy. And some things that Justice Kavanaugh wrote when he was a lower court judge at least suggest that he might have voted like the Chief Justice John Roberts. So in that case, perhaps, you know, a Justice Barrett might not make a difference. But we do know that Judge Barrett, in some of her academic writings, really questioned the Chief Justice's interpretation of the mandate. She said, really, that's not a plausible interpretation of the statute. So, you know, if it came to her, if she were the deciding vote, you know, she might vote to say that the individual mandate is unconstitutional. But then the Supreme Court has to deal with the second question, which is what happens? Is it just the individual mandate that is unconstitutional, or does the whole Affordable Care Act fall with it? And so then that's a separate question. And we're not really sure about her views on this question. It's a legal question called severability. But we do know, again, that not only the Chief Justice, but Justice Kavanaugh have both said that in most cases, the Supreme Court should not strike down the whole law. They should just take out the unconstitutional part.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Charles is with us in Fall Creek. Charles, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I was, just kind of disappointed that we're appointing a Supreme Court justice now when back in 2016 when President Obama tried to do it, it was absolutely no question not going to happen. Just seems like they're really going back on their word. And I mean, based on my own values, I'm afraid that the Roe versus Wade would be overturned.
Charles, thanks for the call. Let's first start with the Merrick Garland issue here. His nomination blocked, not even hearings on that. Amy, how have you seen that turnaround in the Senate?
You know, it's been an interesting one to watch. Earlier in the year, before Justice Ginsburg passed away, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had made clear that if there was a vacancy, he was going to fill it. And he said that the difference between 2016 is that now there is a Republican White House and a Republican Senate. I think for Democrats, they think they really regard that as a distinction without a difference, that this is really incredibly unfair and hypocritical of the Republicans. But there's not a whole lot that they can do unless they could convince at least four Republicans not to vote for a nominee. And it doesn't appear that they're, at least right now, that they've been able to do that.
Talking to Amy Howe, longtime Supreme Court watcher, co-founder of the SCOTUS blog. You can read her work at that blog at amylhowe.com. Charles also brought up Amy Roe versus Wade. A lot of eyes on that issue. I know many states have been changing laws, hoping in some cases to bring it to the U.S. Supreme Court. What are you watching for on that issue?
Yes. I mean, so the Supreme Court has heard oral argument recently and decided a couple of cases involving abortion, but did not decide direct challenges to Roe versus Wade. But as you've suggested, states have been trying to bring that issue to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court quite soon is expected to decide whether or not to take up a case out of Mississippi that involves a ban on abortions, I believe, after 15 weeks. So getting a little bit closer to Roe versus Wade. I think that the Democrats have really focused on health care as an issue at these hearings. But I think it was just yesterday, although, in these news cycles, it feels like a million years ago. The Guardian was reporting about a two-page ad that Amy Coney Barrett had signed back in 2006, calling Roe versus Wade, a raw exercise of judicial power. It was an anti-abortion ad published by an anti-abortion group in the South Bend, Indiana area where she lives. And so I'll be fascinated to see whether or not they make more of this in the run-up to the hearings and then at the hearings.
This also comes down to a judicial philosophy issue that might seem a little arcane, but the idea of whether justices on today's Supreme Court should flip a ruling from a previous Supreme Court unless there's some significant change from it. Do we have a sense of this nominee and how she approaches that kind of decision? And if you want to explain that better than I did, please do.
Sure. No, absolutely. There's a doctrine called stare decisis, which is the idea that normally courts should not overturn their prior decisions unless there's a very good reason to do so. And the idea is that it gives everyone a sense of predictability. And this has become very important with Roe versus Wade, because Roe versus Wade is a decision that, is nearly 50 years old now. And so the Supreme Court has been kind of sparring in recent years when the Supreme Court has thought about overturning or has, in fact, overturned its prior precedent. And we've seen this play out in a couple of cases, including one last year involving whether or not if you are on trial for a serious crime in a state court, whether or not you have a constitutional right to have the jury verdict against you be unanimous. And the Supreme Court had to overturn its prior precedent to rule that, yes, in fact, you do have such a right. But it didn't necessarily, the votes didn't necessarily play out the way you might have expected, including that Justice Elena Kagan, who we think of as being part of the court's more liberal bloc, was in the dissent you know, perhaps thinking down the line of other cases in which the Supreme Court might want to overturn its precedent. And this is an issue that came up at her confirmation hearing when she was on the, you know, going for the Court of Appeals. And it's an easy thing to address when you're on the Court of Appeals, because you are bound by the decisions of the Supreme Court. But obviously, once you're on the Supreme Court can overturn its prior precedent, and it has overturned its earlier cases. And so it's something that she has written about, and I expect that we will hear a lot more questions about it. She's written about it in kind of an academic sense, and you know, you have the sense that she would be, you know, like Justice Scalia, she's not someone who's necessarily going to, you know, charge right out and overturn her prior precedent, but on the other hand, is not completely adverse to it, I guess is how I would say.
In our last 30 seconds, Amy, sometimes in normal times when we have a big confirmation battle, there's this huge campaign and ad blitzes and things like that. We're in the middle of a presidential race this time. Are we going to see as much of a national political storm over this as we might usually?
I think we will. I think that there are, you know, it's my understanding that there are already groups that are very active, that this is, that, you know, this is their field, and that they are spending money on ad campaigns. And there is, you know, we haven't had a lot of time to talk about it. There's so much at stake. That is the perception from both sides. You know, the potential, if you're a conservative, to sort of solidify a solid 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court for, you know, potentially, she's 48 years old, for decades to come. And, you know, for Democrats, the same thing. And but obviously they view that in a very different way.
Amy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
That's Amy Howe with SCOTUS Blog. She writes at amylhowe.com, looking at the latest Supreme Court news.